Yeah, LIGO end-to-end simulation model was developed at Caltech by mainly contribution from mainly these four people: Matt Evans, Malik Rakhmanov, Hiro Imamoto, and myself. And this is LIGO interferometer, a simple sketch. And this is interferometry with the suspended mirrors. That means mirrors can move and mirrors can rotate. And this is a simple setup. This is a simple sketch. And actually, there is a pre-stabilized laser system here, and somewhere here, and input optic system also. So those are very complicated system, and also there is a there are control loops all around. So altogether, it is quite a complicated system, and I can say that it is a coupled. But just by looking at this picture, even you can say that this is a coupled system. All cavities are coupled to each other. Response of one cavity affects the response in the other cavity, and it is dynamic and multi-length, non-linear system. The whole interferometer as a whole behaves almost like an animal. Like if for any particular disturbance, you can always calculate what the response would be for the interferometer. But when you put all these perturbations together, then in most of the cases, it gives some unpredictable and not so easily explainable effects. And that's why simulation is so important. Just theoretical calculation will not give you the results. And with that objective, we started developing E2E about 3.5 years back at Caltech. And we wanted to have a global framework which enables studies of optical, electronic, and all the mechanical components in it. And it is specialized. It is a kind of toolbox which is specialized to simulate this kind of interferometers. And aims are to understand the dynamics, misalignments of the mirrors, what the effects are, noises, and the lock acquisition. I will talk about that later. And for troubleshooting, like why the noise level is so high or why suddenly the lock went away. And also for helping future design of full LIGO or various subsystems. Whatever your ideas are, you just first study it using it, and then you implement. Let me say briefly about how to use it. Using it is very easy. We have a graphical user interface called ALFI, and with that you can. This is what we call box files, and in that you can just make an arrangement. You can just set up your own experiment. For example, here I'm showing an experiment with two mirrors. Fabry-Pérot cavity. This is one mirror, this is one. And there is a laser that is coming through a phase modulator. Phase modulation is necessary for controlling the interferometer because it is dynamic. And basically, phase modulation splits up the frequencies after that, there will be laser frequency, and there will be mainly two sidebands on both sides of it at about a megahertz apart. And then you take the reflected light and you demodulate it at the same frequency, same radio frequency, and then that signal you take back for the controlling it. So this is a simple setup, and you can set this up. You can set different settings for example, reflectivities of these mirrors, then what modulation you want to do, then laser power and things like that, and then you run it and you get the results. So it is very simple. You don't need to know what is inside it. Inside that, of course, there is a lot of physics. And basically, we do simulation like taking a surface, distance surface approach. That means there is laser, and there is a field which laser generates. And it gets transmitted all over. And it carries information about the frequencies and the spatial modes of the laser. That means when there will be say mirror rotating, then the higher order spatial modes will get generated, and all these things it carries spatial modes in Hermite Gaussian basis. So it carries that, and then whenever it passes through a lens or a mirror, which is also basically a lens, then it changes that basis, the basis of that Hermite Gaussian functions, and then it gets into the another cavity and do the calculation at different points. So if it comes to this mirror, then if there are some perturbations like tilts or shifts or curvature mismatch of the beam with the mirror's curvature, then it does some calculation, which we did using mode decomposition matrix, And basically, that is what it is easy to say. But there are a lot of problems, like this is a multi-length system, and so we have speech problem and other things. I'm not getting into that. Basically, finally, E2E provides you all the tools to do whatever physics you want to do. And it is modular and flexible. That means you can study any configuration, any simple configuration to a very complex, say, LIGO 2 configuration. And this is very important. You can look at field at any point and analyze that. And that is very important, because in the actual experiment, you cannot do that. And also, it is important from the point of view of a software design. Like, you can't. It is very difficult to design such a software which is so much modular and object oriented that you can just pick at any point and get information out of it. Also, you as a user do not need to know. This is written in C++. You do not need to know C++ or even programming, or to touch the original code. You never need to touch what is inside. And if you want to develop, for example, if you want to put a new physics module inside, you have your own equations and things like that, and you want to put inside that, then we can provide you the breads of a sandwich, and you can just inside that you can put your equations, and we can integrate it with the whole system. Now we get into the application part. In December 1999, we started the commissioning of LIGO 2-kilometer interferometer, and initially we started just one arm, just one of the arms, and what happens over there. And this is the first slide. That means that is the first disk data actually. And what is happening here is the laser has, as I told you, mainly three frequencies. And each frequency has a lot of special modes. So when they propagate that much distance, the 2 kilometer, all of them acquire different phases. So they get resonant at different points of time. So when mirrors are moving, say at 10 to the power minus 6 meter per second, then one by one, all those modes get resonant. And this is what the signal is. And that is what we generated on the same day. It is one of the simplest simulation runs that we can do, but we love it because this was the first. From here also, it is useful also, in the sense that the slope of these lines are very important. From the slope of these lines, you can guess how far away you are, how far you are from the resonant state, the desired state, and accordingly you can adjust your adjust your cavity. And also, you know how much of the higher order modes are there, present there, over there.
So the bottom curve is the simulation. Yeah. The top curve was the first data.
Yeah. This was the first data, and this was the simulated data we did on the same day. And of course, after that, we used it for many other purposes, but each of them needs a lot of explanation. Like, say, 5 minutes will go just for introducing those things. So I'm not going to all of this. Rather, I'm going into most interesting things about the whole interferometer, and that is the lock acquisition. That means you bring the interferometer, all 6 mirrors are moving, and they are rotating wildly. And your job is to bring the full interferometer from that state to a static, very, very well resonant state. And which means that, and there is a procedure for that. You can't just put laser light and say that all is good. So there is a procedure, and that is you first make the sidebands resonant in this cavity, which is the small one, just in the central building of LIGO. Okay, that is just the central building of LIGO. Here you make the sidebands resonant. Next step, you make the carrier, the main laser frequency, resonant in one of the arms, okay? And you should remember that the making the laser light resonant in one cavity and making it resonant in both cavities is something different. It is not just making it resonant here and then resonant here. It is something different. And what happens is you make sidebands resonant here and then carrier resonant here. Then in the next state, you make this arm also resonant and the carrier resonant in this arm also. And finally, and that is the time when the power really starts building up, and finally you go into the state 5, and that is the desired state. The responses are now linear, and that is the state where you can start doing reasonable observation. So that is the procedure which we follow. And this is the real data, the December 2000. I'm just giving one chunk of data and showing that how these different states are being achieved in the interferometer. Initially it starts, and then this is state 2, that means only this is sideband power, okay? And sideband power is getting resonant, and then finally everything gets resonant. And these are all observable things, and these are error signals which you use to control the interferometer. So there are different modes, longitudinal modes of the interferometer, like big L plus, big L minus, small L minus, small L plus. I'm not going to explain that, but it is a kind of all the longitudinal modes you can explain in terms of four modes, L plus, L minus. And these are observable. And I should point out that here I'm showing sideband power in power recycling mirror. That means inside that central building, you can measure the sideband power. But I should indicate that you can't measure sideband power everywhere. Only if some of the conditions are met, you can measure sideband power, otherwise not. And the central building, the power recycling mirror, that is one point where you can measure it. Now, of course, the question is, what happened there? You can have many guesses which are mathematically consistent or physically consistent, but you need something to understand why that happened. And that is what E2E can provide. And we simulated, and we produced this data, which is almost same as the behavior is same, you can see. So, but it provides something additional. Like it is like a theoretical physicist. He knows better than what the experiment tells. And then, for example, this one can tell you the sideband power in Y arm. One of the Y arms. What is the sideband over there? Because we have equations and we can calculate, but experiment cannot do that. There are some technical difficulties. So we can plot that. Yeah, I'm just finishing. So we can do that, and then we found that the sideband power in the Y arm cavity was getting resonant too, which we actually didn't want. That means from this state. From this state, sideband power was getting resonant here also, and that's such a transient thing we observed over here. And if you know how the coupled cavities work, then that is very easy to explain. Also, you can show, for example, what is the physical length of the interferometer, which, of course, from the experiment you cannot tell. But here you can see that how the lengths are changing, all the cavities' lengths are changing, and finally you get there. And I'm almost finished. Just pronounce myself. Okay, maybe this one. Also, you can do some academic studies, like, for example, the misalignments, how it affects the power fluctuation and things like that. And the whole point is that the modeled interferometer is under your full control. That means you can choose to give it whatever noise level you want. If you want that you don't want to give thermal noise right now, if you don't want to rotate the mirrors, just want to see how it behaves when it just have a longitudinal motion, you can do that. And so it is under your full control. It is not like the real interferometer. And so you can do data analysis also here, like you can put noises and complexities to whatever level you want, and then you can simulate gravitational waves, change its lengths, and look at changes in IFO signals and how the data stream is changed by the presence of the gravitational waves. And you can use your data analysis tools to do the data analysis. And finally, I will just say that this is also a useful educational tool. So if you think that you are not much familiar with optical systems, but you want to understand how LIGO works, or that kind of cavities and other things work, then you can start using this. And from a very simple configuration, slowly you can understand the whole interferometer configuration. Fine.
Take one brief question. When you're trying to simulate data, how many parameters do you have to define?
As I told you, like it can be anything. If you want to say that, okay, you want to just have a static interferometer. Yeah, of course. Like, for example...
What about degeneracy, though? I mean, there must be a lot of solutions that give you good fits.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so not always it is true, but because the point is that the people who will analyze the data, they have some knowledge about the interferometer and how the coupled cavities work. And then of course, there are the number of parameters are, for example, say, longitudinal motion in all the 6 mirrors. Then pitch and yaw, the pitch is like this motion, and yaw is like this motion. So you can set 3 degrees of freedom each mirror, so 18 degrees of freedom. Plus, you can put noises at whatever level you want, and random noises, of course. And if you are trying to use it to understand how LIGO works, then of course you need to understand how coupled cavities work and things like that. So that things will play in your mind. That.
But in practice, when the interferometer is locked and working properly, it's rather simple. It's all linear.
Yeah.
I mean, this tool is essential
for bringing the interferometer to the operating stage.
For bringing it into operation.
Yeah. And also, if at the operating stage, like if you feel that something, there is a burst hiding somewhere, and or is it something else which is happening inside the interferometer? So you can test that, and you can find out that how the signals are being
Okay. Thank you, Bipab.
Okay.
Next speaker.